tonight it's our very great pleasure to welcome back Kenny Johnson, who spoke here once before and blew my socks off. And I put him back on for tonight. I even have two pairs, just in case. Kenny really speaks for himself, and you've probably read the blurb that he wrote for this talk coming up. I don't even want to get in the way of what he's going to do because and characterize.
Neither do I.
Okay. Well, we're in agreement there. So welcome and thank you so much for coming back.
Good to see everybody. Welcome. It's four of you all. It's four? Mm-hmm. And you all gonna do what now?
We're going to share our process.
How are you going to share it?
We haven't quite figured that out.
Mm. So it's going to be you're going totally empty. No idea. But you're holding something.
Oh, yeah.
You do well. When I started in 1998, I asked my teacher Gangaji. I said, "How should I, you know, go in? How should I do satsang? How should I be available to people?" She says, "Be empty." And I have done plays or skits or performances. I went in totally empty. You know, everybody has this long script and they memorize it. And I went in totally empty and I saw how even in art, this has a place. You know, drama, acting, emptiness has a place. It's not just specific, you know, to a gathering such as this. I had some ideas as to what I was going to say today, but I never trust those anyway, so. I trust this moment. Because this is what we have now, this moment. So where are we now? Where are we right now? A lot's going on, but where are we now? Are we in peace now? Are we okay now? Are we safe now? Yes. So we can have a conversation about peace, wisdom, joy. Very mature crowd here, so we can talk about the fruits of our practice. You know, what are we getting out of our practice? What are we getting out of all the satsangs we've attended, the intensives, the retreats, the books we've read? What is the fruit of that? What has that produced? How you doing?
Okay.
I'm talking to this guy here, Carl.
He's doing well too.
How you doing, young man? Okay, you gave me that sign. Now talk to me.
I can identify with empty.
Good.
Okay.
And what has emptiness given you? What has been the payoff, the reward?
Oh, I didn't mean it that way. I mean, sometimes I feel empty and there's pain.
There's what?
There's pain, too.
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. Okay, that's one of them. Name me some more. why do you keep doing what you're doing? Why do you keep coming to spiritual events? What is, how are you being fed, nourished?
I haven't felt nourished.
Mm. So why do you keep coming back to something that doesn't nourish you?
What else am I going
to
do?
What else you going to do?
Got to try.
You got to try. That's, you got to keep going. Keep digging. Keep, yeah. When I was in prison, I was faced with a lot of time. And speaking of digging, you know, I'm a tied in, you know. And I said, I can't do this much time. So I started digging around my mind for a way out of this situation. I kept digging and digging and digging. I found some hacksaw blades and I saw my way out of jail. So that's how I got out that time. But I dug a deeper hole by escaping, you know. But you get keep digging so you can find your way out of something, which is going to lead you to something else. But you keep digging again, keep digging. That might be the thing about satsang tonight, keep digging. What's your name?
Dave.
Pleased to meet you, Dave.
You too.
Yeah. You too. I've been to a lot of satsangs. I go to a lot of events, and I sit with a lot of teachers. And I'm always comparing, you know, how does consciousness come through me? How does it show up through me? How does it show up through this next person? You know? And I find that I have a tendency to really go at someone, you know, go. So I want to go, actually, I'm going to go a little deeper. You say you keep coming, but there's nothing else to do. Is that true?
I can't give up.
Why can't you give up? What if you just gave up? Let's quit doing everything.
Are you talking about satsang or are you talking about things on a
everything.
Larger
everything.
Level?
Everything. So that's only a symptom of everything. It all's linked. It's all one. It's all linked. There's nothing separate from the other. It's all one. So what if you just gave up everything?
Death.
Mmm. Okay, death. What's wrong with death?
It's there.
It's there, right. And how does it feel to be dead?
Don't know. What do you think?
Death is frightening to me. When I realize I have to let go of everything, I have to really be real, be honest, it's frightening to me. But I know, like you say, I got to keep on doing because there's nothing else to do anyway. So I had to keep on seeing if this death is really real. The death of a relationship, the death of a job, the death of a project, you know, just what would happen after the death? Is there life after death? Is there a resurrection? Did Jesus really raise from the tomb and send him into heaven and sit on the right hand of the Father? Did that really happen? From your grin, it must have happened. There must be a resurrection after death.
I don't know if I was there.
But it's a symbolic speaking. You are really the Jesus, and there's really you experiencing death. You're buried in a tomb. Your thoughts, you're buried in this place of death. You've been on this path long enough to experience the death of something. And what was the outcome? Death of a relationship.
don't know how to answer you.
That's beautiful. You're looking for an answer, can't find one. That's beautiful. Keep looking. Keep looking. Back to digging. Keep digging. Hey, how you doing?
Hi. Can I come in?
Yes, you may. Please, see this man a chair. Seat.
Over there?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Excuse. I need one of them.
How you doing?
Very good, thank you.
What's your name?
Jorge.
Jorge.
Yeah, yours?
Kenny.
Kenny?
Yes, pleased to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yes.
Hi.
How you doing, Tito?
Good night, how you doing?
So you're boxing?
No, well, fan more than an actual boxer.
Okay. So have you boxed?
A little bit, not recently.
Where are you from?
I was born in New Zealand.
New Zealand, okay. How did you get here?
Oh, kind of a long story.
Can you frame that story?
How did I get to Sebastopol or the
yeah,
States?
Yeah, let's break it down to Sebastopol at least.
Oh, I don't know if everybody's very interested in that. I just ended up here. I have a close friend that lived up here. And when my marriage dissolved, I sort of packed up the car and came here because it was the closest place I knew about.
So, we're going back to death now. So, when your marriage dissolved, how did that feel?
I don't know. It was difficult.
No. Was there some sort of death that happened? Would you call it that?
Sure, yeah. Mm. Yeah, there's some sort of death. Mm. It's a death of innocence, perhaps.
Mm. Or what came out of the death of the innocence?
I don't know. I haven't analyzed it too much.
No. What's your name?
James.
Pleased to meet you, James.
It's my pleasure.
Yes. I was at Whole Foods, and I went over to get something to eat, and I didn't have any money. So, and I knew satsang would start pretty soon, but I was hungry, and I didn't want to do a hour and a half satsang on a growling stomach, so I need to put something in it, right? So I didn't have any money, I couldn't find my credit card, and I ran out the store. I said, is there anybody I know here? You know, and I turned around, and Samson was.
Yes.
I said, Samson, come on, let's go. I yanked him back to Whole Foods, and I got me something to eat. And Samson left, and I said, let me just examine that question of, is there anybody I know here? I didn't know anyone but God. And that's the only person you need to know. Once you know God, then God takes care of all those things. It was so simple, something so simple. But I said, is there anybody here? I know there's got to be somebody here that I know. I don't know what I'm thinking about, but maybe I knew that Satsang crowd was going to be around, but, you know, he just popped up. Just, yes, I know you. So, who do you know? Who do you know? We all know God. So, we have everything. You don't need to have the money. All you need to have God. Now I'm getting a little churchy and preaching. I'm getting a little churchy on you. But
can I add on to that? I had no intent to go over to that tea shop.
Right.
So just to give a little yeah. juice to, mm-hmm. to the quality of,
right.
of presence or
presence.
God, whatever you want.
Right, right.
That you manifest right. out of the thin air.
Right.
Yeah, he came back full of the story. He was just like so into having run into you. It was
funny. After I was sitting with it, I said, wow, that was kind of cool, because I really needed someone, and he just manifested. I said, just, it's about my previous life. I was always having to do everything, because I didn't really know God. I didn't really allow God into my life, so I was always doing things myself, and I was digging these deeper holes, deeper pits in the prison. But now that I know God, I don't need to know where my next meal is coming from. All I need to know is that Samson is going to pop up somewhere in some form and feed me.
Or I might feed. Amen.
But all you need to know is God. It's that simple. That's why we're here. Do we know God? Do we trust God? Yes.
And fear?
Huh?
Fear?
Well, you don't need no fear. I mean,
but overcoming.
Well, okay, let me, what I'm saying is that all you need to know is a divine one, divine essence, consciousness, awareness. That's all you need to know. And that'll get you through the fear, that'll get you through the death, that'll get you through the marriage, that'll get you to Sebastopol, whatever, you know. That'll get you to wherever you need to go. A lot easier than we can do it with our thinking and figuring and planning and scheming and conniving. This is just a letting go and trusting and relaxing into it, really. Relaxing into the awareness. It's got us anyway, so let's relax into the mother's arms, to the mother's lap. And let us take care of everything we have, everything we have, everything we need. Relaxing, let's relax into it. It's right here. In the Holy Quran, it says it's closer than your jugular vein. The longer we stay on this path, the more solid we become with this truth, the more we become rooted and grounded in. The more we can do practices, whatever you practice, meditation, reading, studying, that to really get to know yourself, get to know the fears, get to know the death, get to know the confusion, the chaos, the emptiness. The more you can just be with that, the more you are that, the more you are absorbed into that. And you be conscious of, and you're walking consciously, you're walking consciously with this. No longer is it just by grace. You're actually walking consciously with this. The more you can be with it, put your practice. I have a practice. I meditate every morning diligently. And if I don't, my girlfriend kicks me out of the house. Make sure I meditate.
So who's really diligent?
Huh? she, I mean, it's just like, well, you know, sometimes wake up like, oh man, I don't, oh God, I got to get up. I got to, because I go to a meditation hall. And I sit and meditate. Sorry, I get up, put some clothes on through the rain, whatever, go and sit. Someone like, I don't want to do this. Oh, I don't want to do this. Ah. But once I get there, I am so grateful that I did. I'm diligent 5 days, and she's diligent another 2 days. So the question is, what do you want? What are your priorities? What do I want? I want more of consciousness. I want more of God. Because I have seen the fruit of serving consciousness, serving God, as opposed to serving myself, or serving my small ego, or my small mind, my petty desires. I've seen the benefits of just serving the truth, the ultimate truth, this oneness, this that is everywhere. It has so many names, I'm not going to begin to try to name it. I've seen the payoff, I've seen the reward from serving this, so I want more of this. He has never, never, ever abandoned me. Never betrayed me. I betrayed myself 1,000 times. My sister, my mother, my girlfriend, we've all just a bunch of betrayers around here. But this doesn't betray me. It can't betray me. It's impossible to betray me. It's your best friend. So I want much more of my best friends. I like that. Nice seeing you last week, both of you.
Was it a good event?
Yes, yes, yes. So, I would like to hear from you all. See what you have to say.
Feels like talking to my mind. I can have a conversation out loud. And it's been supporting me. This obsessive tangent gets on an obsessive tangent. But when I speak out loud, now you can say, shh, settle down. Mm-hmm. When I speak it out loud, it seems to have some good benefit.
Mm-hmm. By speaking to the noise that's in the mind, yes.
In training, whatever that's tied into, some early childhood material, an obsessive machine.
Oh, it's beautiful. That's great. I love that. Oh, okay. What's your name?
My name's Lourdes.
Lori?
Lourdes.
Lourdes.
Lourdes. Lourdes. What's your religion?
Recovering
Catholic. So, what does that mean?
That means that I'm trying to get away from a judgmental, punishing authority that's always belittling my attempts at communication and being myself.
And who? And so you say you're recovering, so it means you're going back to Catholicism?
No.
You're leaving. You're leaving. You left. So you're trying to find yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. So recovering alcoholics, I mean, they went back to AA meetings, you know, so I was checking this stuff out. Because your recovery means different than my recovery. Okay. So you're saying all those years in the church, all you came with was a lot of guilt. Yeah. That's the same thing I came with when I was in the church.
But you were talking about a friend, and it was like, what is this friend that you're talking about?
That's true. That's the conversation we want to have. It's about this friend I'm talking about. Great. It is that friend that took you out of the church. It is that friend that brought you here. It is that friend, do you have children? It is that friend that is taking care of your children? You follow me now? You follow me? It is that friend that wakes you up in the morning. It is that friend that puts food in your mouth and digests the food. It is that friend that is able to keep you upbeat when there's no reason to be upbeat. It's that friend that's with you when you're depressed. It is that friend that's with you when you're confused. That's the friend I'm talking about. You have any reference to that?
Yeah.
How big?
There are times where I get glimpses into how tolerant and how kind my body is to me, and how much it puts up with me and all my thinking. It's just always there. So is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Now, you're thinking. You say it's always there. Now, is the thinking a problem? Is it a friend? Or what is the thinking?
The thinking, it's an interference.
It's the interference. Why is it an interference?
Because depending on what the latest book I've read, or the latest TV program I've watched, or the latest conversation I've had, my thoughts will begin to try to do that, because that becomes the God.
This is a good one. Guess what? I just had an epiphany about me, and I was just fleshing out with my partner Rupan. So I'm still kind of shaky with this one, but I'm gonna throw it at you. I came out of a house where my mother told me and stepfather told me what to do. I went to a jail where the jailers told me what to do. I went to the streets and the street brothers told me what to do. I went to the church told me what to do. I went back to prison and the prison told me what to do. Pretty soon, all my life, I was always looking for somebody or something to tell me what to do. So if the latest book I read, I followed that practice. If Aikido, I do Aikido. Yoga, I do yoga. If it's breatharian, become a breatharian, you know. You know, somebody tell me what to do. So this friend of yours who loves you so much realized that now it's time for you to become an individual, Lord. So he has to take you out of the church, out of the place of guilt and shame and belittlement, and to put you in a place, that's how you saw it, but it's not really like that, but that's what you came away with. So now it's saying you have to say, what is it do you want? Where do you want to go? How do you want to go? And if you don't know, then find out who you are. Then chart your course. Until then, everybody is going to have a piece of you. Then once you just chart your course and say, this is where I want to go, then that friend is going to support you. Because that's where it's pointing you to steer you, to find your course. What do you want? And how do you want to attain it? Until then, you're going to be like sheep. You're going to be led around by whatever comes up next. And I just had that shift. I didn't realize all those years in prison, I got out of prison, and I still was like, I felt this thing in me like, tell me what to do, man. You know, should I do this here? But just now, I said, wait a minute. I'm tired of people telling me what to do. I'm tired of this. I just shake this stuff off. I didn't say stuff, but shake it off, you know. Shit, I just shake this shit off, you know. Because it was really sapping me. You know, and a person who has an organization, people said, what do you want? I remember I got out of prison. This woman said, we're going to do a video of you. How do you want the video, Kenny? I don't know. Well, who do you want in it? I don't know. Well, what do you want to shoot? I don't know. I didn't know anything. Now she asked me the same question. I could tell her, I want it over there in the park. I want to be looking like this. I want you to be down like that. Because I know what I want. I know what I want for me. I know who I want to be around now. And that friend that is always there, that is always taking care of you, that's been peeping at you and giving you winks and hints of it, the more you can start charting your course, the bigger it gets. More excited it gets, more happier it gets, because now you and your friend can have a conversation about where you all want to go and who you want to put in your ship, in your boat, in your yacht, steamliner, you know, whatever it's going to, canoe, I don't know, depends on what you want. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, come on.
You were talking about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, but you didn't give examples about how you, other than you had gotten to meet Dungji.
Mm-hmm.
And that started your path.
Right, right.
So was it the meditation?
Do you have a practice?
Yeah.
What's your practice?
I meditate.
How often?
Every day.
How long? 5 minutes?
At least.
5 minutes? Okay.
That's on a daily basis.
On a daily basis. Okay. And when you meditate, what do you do?
I sit and I breathe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And add this one piece. Let go of all your thoughts. For those 5 minutes, just let everything go. Huh?
I thought that's what I was trying to do, just the breathing.
You're right. Okay, but now I want to say, consciously let go of all your thoughts. What does that mean? Okay, let go of that thought. What does that mean? Okay, and let that one go too. Oh, that one too. Don't you hold on that one. Let that one go. That's a big one. Let that one go. You follow what I'm saying? Just keep letting, and you sit for this 5 minutes, for 5 minutes, make your intention. And on your out breath, just let all your thoughts go. And relax into that, letting them go. You follow what I'm saying? When they come up, just how does that feel?
It always feels good.
Huh?
It always feels good.
Right. So now you have 5 minutes. I want you to 5 minutes of letting go. Now make it 10 minutes of letting go. You follow what I'm saying? Let's increase your meditation just to 10 minutes. Baba said it's very hard to meditate alone, and I agree. It's easier to meditate with a group, trust that supports you. So I don't know if you can have somebody support you or whatever, but I have found it's easier for me to meditate with a group. You know, when I get sitting by myself, I'm like, man, okay, I got 20 minutes, I got 5 minutes. But when I'm with a group, we got 50 minutes, this is it. I can't go nowhere. So I would say increase your meditation and make on the out breath, letting everything go, letting all thoughts go. And just that will lead you to wherever you need to go to get a closer relationship or have a divine conversation, it's a new word I'm picking up, with yourself, with your friend, with your beloved. That's always been there for you. has always taken care of you. When you're asleep, it's watching over you. When you're driving down the street, it's watching over you. Always there.
What's this new word you're thinking about?
Well,
I said divine conversation.
Yeah, divine conversation with your beloved.
New word?
No, to me. New word I'm using. New concept I'm using.
What brought it on?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Last week I was with these gentlemen. We was at Lee Lozowitz Sasso. And he mentioned a mystical conversation. And I've been sitting with that. I said, oh, yeah. Because I remember when I was in prison, I was really having a divine conversation with somebody, get me out of this place. Like, I didn't. I won't do wrong no more, I promise. I was having a divine conversation, like, get me out of this mess because I don't know what's going on. And it happened. That's a divine conversation. They call it prayer. But I like that because of the word, because it seemed like, you know, I'm actually talking, you know, having a sacred moment with something. So, you know. So that's my latest concept I'm using. But prayer, if you want to use prayer. You know.
No, I like conversation. Okay. I like it better.
Yeah, I do too. How you doing, bro?
Pretty good.
Can you see me, man? Am I all
right? Oh, yeah, I can see you. It's fine.
What's your name?
Leaf.
Leaf?
Leaf. L-E-I-F. Leaf.
Leaf.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
What brings you here tonight, man?
Just came to listen. Mm. I didn't have anything going on.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah.
Hey,
that's the truth.
Yeah, that's right. This is a nice place to be when you got nothing going on.
Really, no doubt.
It is.
Yeah, there's nothing going on here. Anyway.
That's right. Nothing going on here either. Just hang out in nothingness, man. Who's your buddy right next to you?
I don't know. I just sat down.
Give me your name again.
Jorge.
Jorge, how you doing, man?
Pretty good.
I know you didn't know. Oh, man. So what brings you here, Jorge? Something or nothing? Which one?
I think a lot.
A lot? Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Okay.
Yeah, I read that you do peace work mm-hmm. in prisons, mm-hmm. and that you were in prison.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that prison is the, compared to war, the one of the worst places to be.
Right.
And we do some kind of work related to peace, health, and joy.
Mm-hmm.
And my teacher does it in prisons. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking that maybe you can tell me how. Can you talk about peace, health, and joy to people that maybe don't care about it and are in prison with a lot of anger inside? And you teach them meditation, you teach them peace.
I've had some guys, well, a few guys, tell me, I don't want to hear what you have to say. I want to hear it. Now, I've had some guys who faced a lot of time, and they wanted to hear this. And you're right. Prison is the toughest, prisoners are the toughest audience. For entertainers, for volunteers, they're the toughest. They're the most shut down, they're the most wounded, they're the most, you know, skeptical, you know. They know everything. So, it is the prison songs that I've been having that have made me strong enough to be able to chart my own course and determine who I am and make me stronger out here. It is they who are making me stronger out here.
Sounds like you're talking about my ex-bosses.
Well, you know, your ex-bosses were probably in some type of mental prison. You know, this is the first prison here. This was the prison that put me in prison. And it kept me in prison. But then I met someone who was able to unlock this prison, these thoughts, you know, just by being who they were, you know, and sharing this message of hope, of wisdom, of joy, of freedom with me. And it's like, oh man, I'm out of prison. I never had to go back to prison again. But how in the hell am I going to survive out there in the world when I've done nothing, nothing to prepare myself, to take care of myself? So let's go back to that. I knew I, once I found God and had to come and start knowing that God was in my life, I didn't need to have any skills. All I need is God. And God take care of all those things.
Can you talk about your experience of finding God?
Mm-hmm. Can I talk about
what happened for you?
What happened for me? Well, before I even met my teacher, I had an experience of freedom, because I call it freedom, because the moment I realized that I had this awakening experience, it was all about, wow, now that I'm free, man, how am I going to take care of myself? So I really knew I was free, right there on the spot. But what led up to that was a lot of reading, yoga. I was preparing myself to receive this truth. I didn't know that all those years of reading Yogananda, Muktananda, the Bible, the Quran, standing on my head day in, day out, you know, trying to reverse the blood flow and all that kind of stuff, and having prayer. I was preparing myself. I was priming the pump. And so when I walked into the room, she just looked at me and I was on fire. I was done. I was so ready. I was so tired of... See, I was tired of jail. I was tired of lying. I was tired of calling my mother and saying, Mom, I'm back in prison again. I was tired of getting out and saying, I'm going to do the right thing. I was just tired of that stuff. And I wanted out. I just wanted out of prison. But I didn't know the prime requisite for being out of physical prison, I had to first get out of my mental and spiritual prison. See, my spiritual friend knew what I needed. So it had to set up a rendezvous. So I had to be in a certain prison at a certain time in order to have this experience. So I was preparing myself, you know, to be born again. Because it was a rebirth. A total rebirth.
So how did you get out?
I had 2 years left on my prison sentence after I met Gangji in 94. So I just did my time. But those 2 years I did it in pure bliss. I was just plunged into bliss. I mean, man.
How did your Indians tolerate you?
They loved me. They loved me. I mean, they would say, this guy got something. Why come you so calm, quiet and all this madness going around? And I said, oh, let me tell you about something. This woman I met in prison, in El Reno or wherever, where was it? Lipton, Colorado. And so I kept, you know, and so I was having song over and over. I couldn't go back, so they had to come to me. There's no way I could go back to that way of thinking. It was impossible. The gulf was too big. So inmates was coming over to me. There's no way I could go back. And they wanted this fire. They wanted this light. They wanted this warmth. They wanted to come in from the cold. So we would walk the yard, ice, snow, smoking cigarettes, talking about having a divine conversation. about the girlfriend, about the mother, you know, about the crime. Because no matter what we talk about, we would always end up talking about this oneness. We always end up talking about this friend. We would always end up talking about the truth. What's your name?
Melissa.
Melissa. Why you ask that question, Melissa?
Because reading the little blurb, I was just curious to hear your story.
Mm-hmm.
I love stories. I learn more from stories.
Me too. I love stories. I'm constantly reading stories and telling stories. I do too.
And it helps me get a sense of who you are.
Did I do a good, pretty good job?
Mm-hmm. So far.
Hey, Ken.
Yeah.
What do you have to say about people who feel like they need an emergency before they can change?
What do you mean emergency?
You know, it's like you need that sort of pressure before you can be receptive for those sorts of changes to occur.
Well, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's a good Buddhist question, isn't it? Do we have any Buddhists in the house that can answer that question? That's a good psychotherapist, a psychological question.
It's a koan.
It's a koan. So what you're saying is, in order to really experience the awakening, you need to be in a very fucked up
feeling,
place.
Feeling something real good or bad.
If
you're not in that place, and life will provide you
the opportunity.
Because we are in that urgency whether we realize
that's
it
right,
or not.
That's right.
And eventually it's just going to become obvious.
So are you in emergency? Do you need
sometimes
emergency?
Sometimes I feel that way on the inside.
How you feel now? What answer do you have for me?
Well, you know, I'd like to save myself the trouble of having to, you know, feel pain to for things to make sense. I'd like to save myself the trouble.
So you're saying you don't want to feel pain in order to feel the wisdom, or to have joy, to be happy, or...
Well, it has its place.
It does.
But I think you know what I'm saying.
I kind of do, and I kind of don't. You know, sometimes, you know, I don't want to... I have a tendency to put words in people's mouths. I just want to just hear what you have to say, because we keep talking, we'll get to the knot. There's a knot somewhere.
It's a knot.
So it can flow, so the energy can flow, so there's a knot somewhere. It's my experience, you know, and I read a lot of stories that, you know, we go on a journey or something like that, we go somewhere, and we have to experience some type of misfortune, setbacks, to realize that we're okay, that all is well. That's been my spiritual experience. So I'm learning now to really, slowly, I'm learning to realize when the pain or suffering is coming toward me, that's a signal that, oh, there's something else behind this.
A lot of times when I feel that, you know, my reaction is to tighten up.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And I miss a lot of the...
That's right. Yeah.
Growth.
Just before I saw Lee Lozowick, I saw another teacher, so I'm going to dispense some of his teachings to you, too. Won't you just, you know, he speaks of just relaxing into the awareness. See how you're sitting on the edge of the chair? See how you like the chair? It already tells me that you're tense. So, well, just, first of all, bodily, let's take some deep breaths and let's relax. And open your chest up. And let's relax. Relax into your body. Feel your body. Breathe into it. Feel your chest. Feel your shoulders. See where they are. Feel your face muscles. Feel your hands. Bring your awareness, bring your consciousness to your body. Bring your consciousness to your body.
Hurts.
Yes, 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 yes. And relax into that hurt. Relax more. Sit back in the chair more. Let's really relax. Let's relax. Let's relax. It ain't gonna kill you. Let's relax with it.
I feel like I'm gonna get bit.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Let's relax into it. Take some breath. Yeah. Keep relaxing. Keep breathing into it. You're safe. You're among friends. We're here. We ain't let nothing bite you. Deeper breath still. Real deep breath. Breathe from here. Breathe out to your feet and legs. Breathe into your shoulders. Relax into it more. Yeah, there you go. See how you, now you see all this. Cut back with this thing. There you go. Relax with it. There you go. Yeah, there you go. Now, how'd that feel? Go a little deeper. Keep on relaxing with it. Just keep letting go. Just keep relaxing and letting go.
You feel like you're going to get hurt if you relax? Sometimes,
yeah.
I feel that way.
Yeah. So you're protecting. You're tightening up. You're tense. You're waiting for the blow. Come, man. It ain't gonna come. And the more relaxed you are when it does come, and the keto, I did a workshop with young kids, and we was a keto, and it was like you went with it. When we went with the guy that went with my punch. So nobody was hurt. Yes, nobody get hurt anymore. You got a stunt double now. You got to stand in. Soon as the punch comes, oh, okay, stop. They take the punch. Consciousness takes the punch. So get comfortable with that. Relax. You're safe. You don't have to operate that way anymore. You can operate a different way. Just relax. How you feeling?
Still waiting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But how you feel though?
Well, calmer than I was when I came in.
Right. Just keep sitting with it. It takes time to, you know, your nervous system was so tight, your muscles were so tight, it takes time for that stuff to, you might need a massage, a hot tub, you know, sauna, you know, a whole
girlfriend.
Bunch of stuff. Girlfriend. That always helps.
Little West.
Huh? West, baby, not all the time. Depends, you know. That's why you moved Sebastopol. See, it takes time, you know, but you want to get familiar with, okay, let me play with this. Next time you catch yourself like this here, oh, wait a minute here. Oh, wait a minute. What's going on here? Let me relax into this. Bring more of your consciousness to your body, to my neck, to my shoulders. Maybe you might need a acupuncture or whatever else, you know? See, but when you relax more, then a girlfriend can come in. They come in, if you like this here, this man's so shut down, so afraid, they can't get up on him. He's ready to run. Fight one. He's not ready to make love. Or to be in love. So be in this love. Be in it. See how that feels. What's up, man?
I don't know. I just I guess I don't know if are we really supposed to be happy all the time, you know? Sorry, is that a ridiculous question?
It's the most natural question in the
world. Natural question in the world, asked. Right.
I kind of have a problem with that.
Right. Right. And what I'm saying right now, right this very moment, in this moment, I feel happy. I feel good. I do. Now, maybe about an hour or so ago, it was a different problem, different situation. But I'm saying right now, this is what I'm feeling. I'm asking you, what are you feeling?
Oh, I'm not unhappy.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Okay, so, when that question, where did it come from?
Well, just sort of the just people's infatuation with happiness. Just sort of, It's true.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
California especially, it's like this.
California especially, huh?
Well, yeah, you know, there's sort of the you know, perhaps the trivialization of spirituality and such.
Right.
You know, life's difficult, and it's probably
very
supposed to be sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry.
That's the journey, though. That's, I mean, I read a lot of fairy tales, mythological tales. There's always pain involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that was the question he was asking is it possible to have this sort of elevated consciousness without having a terrible, you know, opposite? And I haven't heard of any story of any you know, great teacher that hasn't.
Right, that's true. That's true. Mm. It's part of the. There needs to be a tension at all times.
Right.
And it's the tension that's there. It makes it work. Make electricity work, makes cars go. Needs to be that counterbalance, that tension.
You know, it's like kindness and niceness are not synonyms. You know, mm-hmm. some of the kindest people I've known mm-hmm. have been grumpy old buggers, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's something in that. Mm-hmm. You know, and some of the nicest people, they're miserable pricks behind it. Right. So, do you understand?
Well, I do.
So I don't know if I'm really asking a question or just blathering on.
But they're both one the same, though. Pain and happiness, they're both one the same.
How so? How's that?
Well, my experience is this. When I was in hell, when I go to my hell rims,
yeah.
I don't stay there long because I end up coming out of them with so much more wisdom. I would say for me it's wisdom.
Yeah.
About life and the process of life, of giving birth, you know, creating something, bringing something into the world. Creating a new job, a new life, whatever, is painful. You know, moving to another place is painful. But then that process has made me stronger of going through something. The pain aspect.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's something about that makes me stronger and wiser. And so I don't really run from the way I used to run from it. So, okay, here we go. Let me go into it. Let me feel this.
Yeah.
You know, I experienced so much pain in my life when I was young. So much pain. Because I kept making mistakes over and over and over and over and over and over. Whereas now, I'm kind of grateful for all that pain because it produced this. So it's a necessary aspect of our lives. I wish I could do better. I wish I could explain it better. You know, as some of my friends, they can explain it so well, so clearly.
There's a metaphor for that too.
What's the metaphor?
You know how lotuses arise from the depth?
Right.
The murky waters.
The murky waters.
And they come to the surface.
Right. So my question to you then, that you spoke of this pain, what pain are you in?
Oh, I'm not in unbearable pain. There's dark times. Everybody has dark times.
Mm.
But all in all, things are pretty good.
Mm.
I'm not really interested in analyzing it or complaining about it. I think everybody suffers.
Everybody does. Oh. Everybody suffers. That's true. Everybody
and
does.
And I think mine is probably minuscule compared to some.
Mm. But still,
that's real, yes.
Yeah. But even your pain is just as real as the person
sure.
sleeping on the streets.
Yeah.
It's the same pain.
Well, the most destitute times were the least painful. When I was homeless, and you know, there's a sort of relinquishment that you were talking about, I guess, in this chat.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of give up.
Mm-hmm. Letting go, give up.
Right.
Surrender. Submission. Humbling yourself to the process.
Mm-hmm. What I've noticed is, like, when you don't have anything, it's easier to lose or give away what you got.
You say what?
It's easier to lose or give away what you got.
When you don't have anything?
When you have less. You feel that.
When you have less. You got a lot, then what?
I'm afraid of losing.
Yeah.
I am.
Right.
Have been.
Mm-hmm. Someone that's like, how you doing in the corner? What's your name? Joan. Joan, could you speak about the pain you experienced?
It's demoralizing, disintegrating.
Mm-hmm. You said demoralizing, disintegrating. How do you, I don't mean to, you know, you've been around a while, so you experienced a lot of pain, and what would you say about pain, I mean, besides demoralizing, degrading?
I haven't been to the place where I can sit with it for very long.
You say you haven't been to a place where you can
sit? And possibly learning or trying to do that, and I'm incredibly afraid of death. And yet I know that, you know, that's coming.
Yes.
Very soon.
Yes.
And in times of great loss, it's like I didn't know who I was anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or why was I here anyway?
Right.
I go through those periods, and there aren't any specific answers. I don't get an answer as why I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm just in a long road of trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come a long road already.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like the people that, I'm like people, I said to my associate over here, these are all the rebels in Sebastopol, because you know that little blurb of yours brought out all the rebels. You don't believe in this exactly straight and narrow.
Right.
But I have to just say, I'm in chaos,
mm-hmm.
and chaos is coming in,
mm-hmm.
and that's getting to be okay.
Yeah.
All I can say is that's how it is, and so it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
For what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to differ with you in that I don't think there's a God.
Okay.
And I don't think there's any. I even don't want somebody to give me comfort and safety.
Mm.
It's like I honor the fact that I can do A, B, C, D, E and take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that makes me a more honorable person, that I can carry my own shoes.
Yeah.
And I don't get to. You know, I can deal with it, and I don't trouble anybody.
Right.
And that kind of thing. And I honor the fact that I can work and produce something in this world, and that might be a small thing, but it's in the scope of things, but it's very valid to me. It makes me hold my head up high.
Mm. Thank you. Yes? How you doing, young man?
Good.
What's your name?
Daniel.
How you doing? Okay. Real good or so-so?
I'm pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. My life's been interesting. Lately.
How interesting?
How interesting you're asking me? I've been trying to look at the things in myself with a little bit more intensity lately that keep me from relaxing.
Mm. From relaxing?
Yeah.
Mm.
That one's a challenge for me. Mm.
What's your experience? What have you discovered?
That there's more there than I thought.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to stop looking?
No, not anytime soon.
Yeah. Why do you keep looking? Even though there's more than you ever could imagine, why do you keep looking?
Because it's also more fascinating than I could have imagined. Not the stuff that's preventing that, but just the process.
Yes, the process. Mm.
and realizing, you know, that who I am today, I had no idea, you know, a week ago.
So it's constantly evolving.
Oh, it just never stops.
Never stops running.
Sometimes when I think of the word evolution, that seems like in a particular upward direction, which isn't always the case, but it's just interesting to see how things are just always moving. You made a comment about letting God do the work. And so it sounds like you're talking about some kind of surrender.
Yeah. And when I mentioned God, I didn't mention that. I don't know what God, you know, how you look at God, but how I perceive God in my life is whatever this mysterious intelligence was that came and heard my prayer and unlocked those prison doors, that's what I serve. So I have to give it a name. Sometimes I call it divine consciousness, sometimes I call it God, sometimes I call it awareness, sometimes I call it Jesus, sometimes I call it Buddha, I don't know, it depends. The Holy Ghost, the Holy Spirit, you know, I don't, you know. But whatever that was, that's what I serve. Whoever that was, whatever that brought got me from hell, I serve that. So that's why I taught God, and I surrender to that. I let that God teach me. That's my guru. My teacher points told me that God was inside, the guru was inside. So I finally quit looking at her as my God, as my savior, as my guru, and I started looking here. And once I found that here, I've been serving that. That's why I call it my best friend. Because something hurt me and saved me. Because I'm not supposed to be here. This is the icing on the cake. This is the icing on, you are the icing. Frosting.
You're the cake.
And I'm the cake. Or vice versa, whatever the case may be.
So how do you serve that though? Like, what does it feel like?
The same way you are. The same way. It's a process. I realized that this, my practice is a process, because I would look back a year ago and like, wow, I did this. I meditated, I prayed, I read books, I stayed true to this. Look what happened. Okay, this is a process. I read all types of other material, talk to people, but I realize this, my life is the laboratory. I'm the scientist. So I have to go and bring all my attention to here and see what's going on. What's going on with me? You know, last week I was angry, this week I'm happy. What happened between that time and this time? What did I do? What didn't I do? This week I had $1, next week I got $10. How did it happen? What did I do? What's the process here? Last week I had no girlfriend, now I got 20. What's the process? You know, you see what I'm saying? So I start watching that and tracking that. Oh, it's a process. Life is a process. You know, you go into hell and you experience and you come out with gifts. You go, you come out with gifts. You keep coming out. You go into those places, those dark places, underwater, the dark places, you know, the Hobbit and all those type of stories. And you go to these dark places, you come out with gifts. But you got to go into the darkness, the unknown, the scary place of death. And that's the pain. That's what makes this life to what it is. That's what keeps us coming back to groups and things like this. Because we can trust this process. It has not failed us as of yet. But however you look at it, it's personal to you. But it's the same basic principle process. That's why they wrote the Gita, the Quran, and all the other books. You have 1,000 teachers talking about it. That's the same process. Yes.
I'd like to share a dream I had.
I love this part. I love dreams.
They completely transformed a lifetime of searching for God. I was in the dream and I was crying and just crying my eyes out, just wailing and moaning, just really suffering, which is my usual mode, very familiar feeling. Just crying and crying and crying. And from off to the right came this old man carried on a stretcher, feet first. And accompanying him was this beautiful, beautiful young girl. And she was radiant. She was either his daughter or his wife, or it was just like she was his she was accompanying him. She was his divine companion.
Consort or something.
And
like that. And
as he approached, his feet were off to my right, and I'm absorbed in my sorrow. And he kept trying to get my attention. Obviously, he came to find me, and he started uttering this guttural sound. And so I had to stop my sorrow to listen. And he was speaking in a foreign language, so I really had to listen. And I realized he was saying, "Guru, Guru." And when he said that, my head was burst in flames, and I was still holding on a little bit to my suffering, and the flames were burning me excruciatingly. But when I realized that he was saying Guru, when I gave him my full attention, the flames that were excruciating turned into this blissful, cooling consciousness. And in the dream, I woke up, and I threw myself at his feet. And it was so ecstatic to prostrate. I just got up and kept prostrating and prostrating and prostrating. And then he was happy, and the people took him away. And this young girl, his young consort, was just skipping along happily, and they went off into the sunset.
Oh, thank God.
And I woke up.
That's beautiful. That's a big one.
That was
a big one. Oh, my God. Oh.
And since that moment, since that awakening moment in the dream, all the thoughts are just falling. All thoughts and all the tendencies, they're just falling off me like lint.
Right. The flames burning.
The flames.
Being consumed.
It's just staying right here, staying at that feet, at the feet.
That's right. Thank you. I love dreams. I love dreams. What'd you say? Are you gonna say that? How you doing, man? You're right on time. What's your name?
Aja. Aja?
Aja?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Aja. Aja. And where are you from?
I just got here from Hawaii.
Wow, man.
I was bored, and I went to go play a game of pool, and then I saw the sign here, and I thought it would be difficult for me to play pool.
Ah, thank you. I mean, one guy said he wanted to... Bye.
Good night.
Good night. One guy said this is better than doing nothing, so you said this is better than doing pool. We're getting a little better here. We're improving. Your name?
Ellen.
Pleased to meet you, Ellen.
Nice to meet you.
You know, what brings you this far?
When I read the blurb on that flyer, I was really interested in your story. It sounded very inspiring. It's very calming to be here.
Yeah, I am. As again, I like I sat with so many teachers, I've seen so many different ways of teaching, and I always have to ask myself, I said, what comes through me as an individual? What comes through me? And once I got comfortable with what does come through me, I'm okay with that. So I don't have to be so, what's the word? Erudite? I don't have to be so eloquent. You know, I can curse, you know, I can just sit here and look silly, you know what I mean? And something come through. So once I learned that, I was okay with that. So I didn't have to learn, I didn't have to know all the different, I don't have to know all the eight parameters and the four noble truths and the Ten Commandments and the Beatitudes. It's just whatever comes through this body, let it come through. And I realized that what comes through here just is peace. Oh, that. And I think that what our bodies want most is just to be at peace. What our minds want most is just to be at peace. If you want to go to someone who can explain all this, well, next week I'm sure they have somebody to be able to sit up here and talk you to death. You still have to let go. It's okay, let me find a way up behind all these words. I go to people's South Song, I say, I got to let this go because I can't track this person. I can't remember all those words, you know. So thank you for that reflection. I really appreciate that. What do you do?
With that?
What do you do?
I work at the local junior college, Santa Rosa Junior College.
Okay.
They have a special department for people with disabilities. And I work in the computer lab to help teach students how to use a special technology, you know, if they're blind or if they can't use their hands or special technology. I learn a lot from students.
Yes, you do. They're teaching you a lot.
Yeah, there are people who had to deal with a really difficult thing.
Yeah.
And I get inspired by that.
Yeah, that's who gives us hope, the people who have had real hard lives and they came through and they're laughing and joking like, wow, this is great. So I mean, it lets you know you can come through whatever your world is, whatever hell you're going through.
Right, that's really true. You're some of the most motivated students. They feel lucky because, you know, the general population, you know, they're fine, but
well, or they think they're fine. Right. They think that they're fine. Right. These are the ones who have disabilities. Know I have a disability. That I need help here.
Right. And they're real appreciative.
They appreciate it too, right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Nice to meet you. How you doing? What's your name?
Louise.
Louise?
Louise, yes.
Pleased to meet you, Louise.
Nice.
Nice jacket.
Thank you.
What brings you out here with this band of rebels, rebel rousers? Who don't want, who had nothing to do, who thought this was better than a food hall game, who was at the wrong coffee shop. So, what else?
I was here last week and I just enjoyed it so much, being with my family. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like I read that you were awakened by Ganga too.
Beautiful woman.
Beautiful. When I first met her, I had no idea what she was talking about.
Right. Do you know what she's talking about now? Okay. There's a friend right next to you. Not on your left. You don't know her?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Okay.
What brings you out here? Reading books and stuff. Then you go ahead.
I just walked in. I don't know if you've talked about this, but I'm randomly curious. Do you think that there's a being or a thing called God? And if it is, what is that?
Here you go, God again. See?
I mean, God is a loaded word, but.
Well, I just talked about that. We'll back it up. My own experience of God, as I said earlier, is that when I was incarcerated, I was praying to God and whomever else, or this mystery, someone to come and save me from myself. I would get 4 o'clock in the morning, everybody asleep, and they would say, in the Holy Quran, it says, prayer is better than sleep. So I would get up, no matter how hard and sleepy I was, and go and sit in the room and just meditate, just be there. Then I'd go back to bed, then get up and go to breakfast. And I, just over and over and over, praying for something to save me from this hell that I placed myself in, over and over and over again. I'm 47 years old, and the hustles I'm doing, they're getting smaller and weaker, and the money's getting smaller, and the time's getting bigger. And if I don't get this thing together quick, I am going down for the last. I'm going down, and it was 1, 2, 3, and ain't no 4. And I knew that. So I was praying. I was feverishly praying. Like one of those cartoon guys that's falling off a cliff. He done jumped over a cliff. I was like that. And I got, and just through the grace, Gandhi had a program inside at Littleton, Colorado. I got transferred from Springfield, Missouri to Littleton, Colorado, and I was able to sit in on a couple of her volunteer meetings. And still I didn't understand what she was saying on the TV, but then she came in real life, and another guy named John Sherman, he had an awakening experience, and that just confirmed that she had something. Now, whatever else she had, I wanted that. Then the next time she came in, before she could even get to talk, say anything, she looked over at me, and I looked at her, and it's just like the words she was saying didn't really make sense because I was already gone. I was done. I was like, I relaxed. For the first time, I relaxed. My mind relaxed. She kept talking for the next hour, and I didn't hear nothing. I walked out of the chapel. I looked into another person's eyes, and I said, are you like this always? She said, yes. And I looked into the stars. I said, wow, stars. I hadn't even recognized beauty in another human being or beauty in nature. I didn't even know that existed until that night. And so that was what I call God. That whatever directed her to come to prison and to share that message and for me to hear it and to bring me out of prison and put me here to have a conversation with you about God, that is what I call God. That brought us together. Whatever that is. That's what I serve. That is what I call God. It's real to me, as this gentleman is, as this lady is. That God is just real to me. Is that real? Or even more so. That God has taken care of me all those years after I got out of prison. No matter where I was when I was alcoholism, it took care of me. Always has taken care of me. That's what I call God. I have no idea where it is, what it is, why it is, but I'm glad it is. So now you caught up. Now we are, as they say, we're on the same page. Oh, Michelle.
I was just thinking of you told me that story about you being depressed and Gangaji just kind of making it okay to have that emotion.
When I got out of prison, I was 47 years old, and I was working with people who were my age, but they owned businesses. They had wives, Cadillacs, banking, everything. I had nothing. And I felt so inadequate. And so that threw me into a deep state of depression. Oh, poor me. I don't have anything. And how come she has a new car, a new husband, and all that? I got nothing. We're the same age. And, you know, all those things as those was inundating, so everybody saw that I was suffering. I was in a deep state of depression. And Gangaji was doing a weekend intensive, and she heard about it, so she wanted to see me after one of the afternoon satsangs. And we took a walk from the satsang hall to her hotel room. And as we was walking, she says, "Oh, Kenny, I see you're suffering." I said, "Yeah. Okay." And that was it. I mean, she didn't really, you know, say, "Don't suffer, you know, let it go, you know, go read, you know, go do 30 Hail Marys or get your mala beads out and do your mantra or, you know, breathe all over here." You know, and he said, "Oh, you're suffering." She acknowledged the suffering. And from then on, I was able to acknowledge that I'm in suffering, I'm hurting here, or I'm angry. It was okay to be in those places. She didn't try, you know how your friends try to back up with a spiritual tow truck and tow you up out of there. You know. Just leave me, I'm suffering right here. I remember a girlfriend, she called me at 3:00 in the morning. She went on and on about all her troubles, and I'm trying to fix her. I'm trying to repair her. I'm trying to get a monkey wrench out. I'm trying to get some pliers. I'm trying to do everything I can to fix her so she's happy. And she says, "Kenny, I just want you to listen to me. Don't try to fix me." And I got, "Oh, that's right. Let's let her be. She just want to talk." So now when she called, I listen. What'd you say? when I'm in prison, we have a circle, and I like for everybody, you know, most to put their voice in the room. You know, so I know it's a lot of us. So I just point someone just to get your voice in the room, because I mean we came here to take advantage of this moment to support each other. To work through something or to see something or to, you know. That's why I come to Satsang. So why'd you come here?
She brought me here.
Ah. So you do know what you want. You do have an idea of what you want.
There's been times where I've been meditating and it has been so wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And when I noticed that it was so wonderful, it disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want that to happen.
Oh, there's the rub. Allow that to hit me back to depression. Just allow that to be here. You know, not wanting, you know, the happiness to go away. Just allow that thought to end. Happiness is your basic nature.
Happiness or
joy? Whatever you want. Here we go with this word thing. Either one. Joy. Happiness, joy, bliss. Because when I was in bliss, I was just happy and I was joyful, you know, and I wasn't even me. I wasn't even there. You know, Kenny wasn't there. You understand what I'm saying? When you really, there's no Kenny. There's just this joyousness. This blissfulness, it's just there is no Kenny. You know, Kenny is when I don't want it to go away. The Kenny show up on the scene. But in your practice, see, the more you do your practice, the more you do the practice, the more you become familiar. Oh, okay. This is just. You know, I see where I don't want this. I don't want this to run away. You start noticing that. Oh, noticing those thoughts that are really preventing the happiness just to be there at all times, because it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. That's why, and I say, expand your meditation from 5 minutes to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm.
And all she was having me do was to breathe. Yeah. And years before that, I had heard about the breath and how it was supposed to bring you joy, and I was just going, that's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened, and it was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But to get to that place,
mm-hmm. It takes practice. Mm-hmm. Or just grit, or just happens.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a practice. I had the moment of grace where I knew that I was one with everything. I could be there as long as this mystery wanted me to be there. And then once it closed up, now I'm actually walking back to that place, doing my practice, doing my meditation, you know, to become established in that. So I'm supporting myself. I'm supporting my practice. I'm supporting that happiness. Because thoughts are running around all over the world and all over the universe. And if you aren't focused on something, then you'll get knocked around. So here comes the thought, oh, happiness is going to leave. It always does. There it goes. Well, you manifested it. When I say happiness is going to be here all the way to, I'm joy, I'm pure, unadulterated joy, I'm going to be here forever. Ah, let's see what happens. Now, this is not a joy workshop, a happiness workshop, but I'm just saying, you know, that's our basic nature. But then I saw last week a man who was dying of cancer was pissed off, wasn't he? But under that, he still was happiness itself. He was saying how it was. What did you say? How you doing, man?
Just had a thought.
What was your thought?
I wrote it down. That it takes a certain quality to hold existence in existence. And that quality, in my experience, is joy, and everything else is kind of a diversion from that. But it always come back. I always come back to there.
You always come back where?
To there, to that place, to that essential, quality.
Mm. Mm.
Where trust is real important. Trust that you're going to find your way back there. That's like trusting that life isn't a dirty trick. If it's a dirty trick, it's like maybe God's insane.
Oh, I had a conversation with a friend yesterday morning, last night. He was trying to describe to me psychotic, you know. And I don't think he did a great job of psychotic. Then we looked in the dictionary, and he made us that much more confusing. But he says, we were talking about George Bush, the movie W. He says, George Bush had to be right no matter what. That's psychotic. I said, well, you know, George Bush is God too, you know. He says, a psychotic cannot be God, you know. And so he started describing all the things of what a psychotic is. It's got to be right, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. I said, that sounds like God. And so he kept going on and on and on about all the things what a psychotic is, you know. I said, that sounds just like God to me. Because God is in everything. In every single thing. In the neurotic, the psychotic, you know, it's still there. Now, I lived in prison where 47% of us was insane. And I don't know which one I was. Probably the 47% that was insane. Because whatever I was doing, I had to be insane to keep doing it. And looking for, also he said, a psychotic keep doing the same thing, looking for different results, and if he doesn't find it, he keep on doing it and try to, you know, do the, I said, that sounds like God. You know, I'm just joking with him, you know. But I kept trying to do the same thing. I mean, I would rob this, I would take this and go to jail. I said, well, man, well, I'm going to rob it better or something. And I go out and rob and go back to jail. I said, Jesus Christ, man. Okay, I'm going to do it like this here. And I go to jail again. I said, man, Christ. I kept doing this. So I had to be insane. What do you call that insanity? I mean, so it makes sense that half of us is crazy. Doing the same thing. So y'all talking to a crazy man up here. Insane. They said that every year in prison it takes 2 years out here to change it, to become normal. Some of the things you see in prison, you just stuff it. You know, you hear you just stuff it till you get out here. And it's so painful out here, guys can't handle it out here, so they go back. They said, it's so painful, so hard to make that leap, that transition to holding the job down, you know, being vulnerable, being seen. This is the best therapy for me, is right here being seen. This is the best therapy for me. You couldn't ask for a better therapy. To have 20-some people look at me and through whatever they do. And me to be able to sit here and feel that. A lot of guys can't, men and women, they can't make it out here. They come out here and look at the hurdles they have to jump over. I just can't do it. I'm not willing to be vulnerable, let my partner see me. I'm not willing to hold a job down every day. I'm not willing to be homeless for a while until something come along. I'm not willing to not shoot this drug. Yes. Huh?
You know, I just had to share that, you know, just in my path as I continue on, it's like the deeper I go, the less I want to talk.
Mm-hmm.
Or the less I... Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Often there's just no words.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling is very strong.
Mm-hmm.
I'm that way too, actually. I kind of like look at it, but like, say this is my pain,
mm-hmm.
and this is me trying to relax.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I can kind of feel like something's gonna happen, and I want to pull back, and I want to ready myself, you know? But I've experienced gains when I'm able to touch it and feel it. But, you know, I think there's a smart way to do that, too. And I've done it both ways. You know,
So what's the smart way? Do you have any kind? What do you do? What does your typical day look like?
The closest connection I have is being outside, being outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
You like that? And then what does that do for you?
I don't know. It gives me some sense of inspiration,
mm-hmm.
and beauty, and connection.
So how often
thankfulness.
How often do you go to nature and be with nature?
Not as much as I should. Or as I would like to.
What's preventing that?
Fear.
Fear.
I mean, like, giving up, you know, my financial survival during the day, or... I could answer that different ways.
Why don't you make it a practice of trying to connect with nature as much as possible? Just put that prayer out there. Who knows what might happen? Things might open up for you to connect with nature a lot more.
I don't know, a lot of times I just feel like, you know, I know this isn't always true, but people are the problem. You know, it's like I feel it. Maybe that's just a thought.
I don't know.
It's a thought.
Right. Right.
It feels very real.
Right, of course it does. It was people probably which caused you a lot of pain, would you say?
I don't know. If I was, you know, put together different, maybe I wouldn't have felt pain, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So just keep feeling. Keep looking. Keep digging, as you said. Yes.
I'm interested to hear what kind of prison programs you are doing right now. If you're looking for other people to help you out.
Well, this is what I'm doing right now. I have two programs, prison programs, one in San Quentin, one in San Francisco County Jail, one for women, one for men, Tuesdays and Saturdays. And I had another program in San Bruno, and I just got a call the other day that they're looking for me to come back, and I may go back, I may not go back, depends. But what we're doing now, we're actually, I did a weekend with some young kids, they're called Block Ambassadors. And we went to a retreat in Marin Headlands for 3 days. After I came off the retreat with these young men and women, here they are trying to stay out of the gangs, they're trying to unite the gangs, it's called Turf Unity, and they're trying to unite it through the music and through their spiritualness. I was blown away. So now I'm refocusing my attention or expanding this sacred space to include how can we offer retreats or weekends to young inner city men and women who need the opportunity to get away and to explore their poetry, to explore their music, and to support their bodies through yoga, keto, or whatever else we're going to massage, whatever else we're going to bring to the table. And so what we're looking for people. We got two prongs. We're doing this two ways. We are offering retreats for those who are adults, and the funds that we get from that, the weekends or that we're doing, we will go to support the young men and women. And also we are getting people who are now willing to start writing proposals and grants and all that stuff. So now we're going into the phase of really trying to do weekend retreats, intensive right now. Because I realize the power in that for the participants and for the facilitator, and also how that can be translated into supporting the young men and women to sponsor projects and programs for them. So that's where I am. So I'm looking totally toward the youth because they're trying to stay out. They're trying to do things. They need their homeless. I mean, I went to a place called Covenant House, and all these kids are homeless. And
circular like this?
Yes. Oh, yeah. There's
a flyer there, too, in the folder.
And this is our basic model for now. I mean, it's just all coming together because up until about a month ago, I had done the small groups like this, but I hadn't done a weekend where I was actually holding the space. And so I came out stronger myself. So, I want to do intensive now, whereas we can generate funds to take care of the kids so the kids can do this. One kid, he was just so happy that's a beard, you know, in the hall, we just let him fall asleep. I said, let him sleep. Don't wake him up. He's getting everything, you know, all his nourishment, he's been able to relax. Some kids came, they were there just to, that Thursday, some kids ran into their apartment and pulled guns or AK-47s on them and threatened with their lives. So we just got them there just so they could just relax, so they could be safe and figure out their next move. So that's who I want to work with. That's who I'm going to work with. And this is how we're going to work, is just providing retreats and opportunities and programs for them so they can be able to experience what we experience, this peace. Because they are on the front line. They're in the trenches right now, you know, facing down guns and everything else to bring the turfs together, to bring the gangs together through their poetry. I mean, these kids, we were walking down the beach, and they were just freestyling. And they were just spitting it out there. I mean, freestyling, just rapping, and they were just it was amazing. They were taking things from the grass, the air, and the people, and making it musical, and having a beat to it, and it was fast. And I said, wow! And so what they showed me was that in order for them to be able to be that free, they had to be empty. In order to let it come through, let whatever needed to come through, they had to be totally empty. And so I realized what they're having spiritual experiences through their music. Because they have to totally let go in order to let something come through them. So they're actually waking up in a rap music, but they don't know it. They don't have, their language is totally different. You know, the way they explain it is totally not like us, you know, consciousness, awareness, it totally talk differently, but it's all the same thing. They're having spiritual awakening through the music. And so we want to be able to provide retreats for them, whereas during the daytime we're having satsangs, yoga, or whatever else case may be. Then at night they can go and just make their music from a conscious place without using the B word and the N word and all the other words, because they're still doing that. But we want to give them the more conscious music. So that's what we're doing. And so we have a sign-up sheet on that. And please sign up. And what once we get a little more focus on where we're going with this, because this is totally in its infancy. This sacred space is changing. This website, we're totally, you know, this is like whole new. I didn't know I was ever going to work with kids. I thought I was going to be working with men and women incarcerated. But now it's like, wow, here's such a vast group of kids that need support. Yes.
I imagine that you experienced some and probably saw a lot of anger. And I guess my question is it such a bad thing? Because it seems to me sometimes that I surge with a sense of purpose when I have some anger. Can you answer that? When I feel like there's some, when I have some sort of righteous indignation, when there's some sort of, do you understand?
Yeah.
And I'm sure you saw a lot of that. You've seen a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And I understand that there are people that elevate themselves beyond that, mm-hmm. And they're great, great people. Mm-hmm. But I've also known a lot of people that have been fueled by some, anger.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, anger's just perfectly okay. Like depression was perfectly okay for me. You want me to say something else?
No, not if you've got nothing else to say.
That's it. Take care.
Thank you.
Yes. I saw the movie Milk.
Harvey Milk.
And he was, indignation, anger, all of it. Look what he produced. As a African American, when I came here, I saw so much openness because of what the gay movement did. It's opened up so much.
Right.
There was so much, it opened up to where I could, wow, man, me being black with a Caucasian woman is nothing. You know, because I come from the Midwest, it was a big deal. You know, you get shot and then chased down the street. Here, it's just like,
even today?
No, I mean, you go someplace in the Midwest, someplace in California, you get outside the Bay Area.
Yeah, that's real. I did, when I was in South Carolina, I had a black girlfriend, African American, mm-hmm. and we got in some strife a couple of times.
Yeah,
I was surprised, but it's for real.
But you come out here in California, it's nothing. That's the least you can say. But it went through hell to get.
Right, exactly.
And they had to have the righteous indignation, got to have the anger, all that, in order to make things. We had to become that. Right. They had to have that in order to change things.
Why do we need that to make things change?
Because that's what people understand.
Doesn't there have to be an awareness of injustice?
Can't we change the paradigm? So
yeah, but that's not where we are right now. That's not where we are right now.
When does that come to
happen? Well, just keep on doing what we're doing. Keep on having meetings like this. Keep on sharing it with others. And we sort of shift one by one. Keep on working with youth. Keep on working with people in prison. Keep on working with people that are handicapped. Sharing, that's how it changes.
It's like cells of an organism.
Yeah.
I mean, what would have happened if Churchill wasn't angry, you know?
Right. That's right.
I don't know the answer. I understand that there are exceptional people that are far beyond that, but...
Gandhi was probably pissed on some level.
Yeah. Yeah, had everyone else.
You have to have those tools in order to change things, but use them at the right time. I was angry and I was robbing people. That was totally inappropriate. But that's what I knew. That's all I knew.
I like the metaphor of an internal combustion engine where there's these explosions going on inside. Mm-hmm. There's this raw energy, and so the challenge is to translate that, those explosions, that raw energy, that rage or whatever it is, into something useful, something that involves vision.
I want to thank you all for coming. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And on behalf of Many Rivers, I want to thank you. Oh, present that. It's time.
Yes, it is. Man, yeah.
Try to put your hands up there.
Yeah.
Just in time.
Yes, yeah, I did.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's the sign-up sheet going around someplace. There is flyers, I think, have gone around. There's a donation bowl, and half of that goes to our speaker tonight to support his work, half to support this space. Thank you all so much for coming tonight, and thank you to our speaker.
This is what I give to the guys in prison. I wrote this up one day, and the guys keep asking for it. So I want to give everybody one that's still here. We have more somewhere?
Yeah.
Where? This is something I wrote, and the guys love it, you know. I mean, just a precursor to my book that's coming out later on this year.
Cool.